Since the beginning of Israel's war on Gaza, local journalists have made an essential contribution to the coverage of the conflict. They have been on the front lines, both as witnesses and victims. As the stories of murdered journalists in Gaza have increased, the audience is receiving only a partial narrative of this war. My name is Katerina Vucina, and I'm a journalist at IMED. I spoke to Sherif Mansour, the Middle East and North Africa Program Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists. CPJ is an independent, non-profit organization promoting press freedom around the world. When our discussion was recorded, 83 journalists had already lost their lives. He spoke about the deliberate targeting of the press in the besieged Gaza, the increase in arrests of reporters in the West Bank, and the urgent need for access to non-embedded international journalists. Hello, Mr. Mansour, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. The Committee to Protect Journalists tracks and documents attacks, threats, deaths, and of course the imprisonment of journalists around the world. The ongoing war in Gaza is particularly alarming, marking the deadliest period for journalists, especially since CPJ began collecting data in 1992. This is 32 years of monitoring, right? Could you provide some context on why this situation is so unprecedented?
We have possibly the most dangerous assignment for journalists we have seen, specifically for local Palestinian journalists who compromise 90% of those who've been killed so far, 76 out of 83. The other seven are four Israeli and three Lebanese journalists. And that has been the case even before this war started. Gaza was dangerous for journalists. It's where two-thirds or 13 out of the 20 journalists who were killed over 21 years by IDF fire were killed in Gaza. And two out of the three journalists that we categorized before this war as murder journalists by IDF fire were killed in Gaza in 2018. The pattern we have seen in this war is the same pattern we've warned about last year when we issued deadly pattern report. We said that this deadly pattern leaves Palestinian journalists vulnerable in a precarious situation and leads to a chilling effect about the ability of journalists to cover IDF activities. And what we've seen after this war started, that deadly pattern became more deadly, from about one journalist per year since 2001 to about one journalist per day. We've had the deadly stay in the region for journalists. On the first day, seven journalists were killed. And then the deadliest week, 16, the first week. And the deadliest month on record was 42 journalists killed since 1992. And overall, the Israeli army has killed in a 10-week period more journalists than any other army or entity have done in any given year on record. This is unparalleled. It is the most deadly and the most dangerous. And of course, the people who are paying the most toll and the sacrifices and bearing the brunt of it is Palestinian journalists. Many of them are local freelancers, photojournalists who publish their work online or send it to international media. And of course, they are 80% or 90% of the casualties because also international journalists have been dwindling out of Gaza over the years. Local Palestinian journalists had to be the main source of information and be on the front line, which makes them the most needed, but also the most vulnerable.
Can you share any stories you get from local journalists in Gaza?
Well, from the first day, it was clear that these journalists did not have a safe haven or an exit. One of the first Palestinian journalists to be killed, Ibrahim Lafi, was killed near the Erez crossing in the north, and another one right after was killed near the Rafah crossing in the south. These are the only two entry and exit points from the Gaza Strip. And since then, the Palestinian journalists have been killed everywhere in between, including where they were told it's going to be safe in the south. Of course, many of those who were killed have worked with or participated in coverage in the past. And one of them I have had the pleasure of communicating with when I went to Tel Aviv and Ramallah in May to launch our special report. He is someone who had actually helped us gather photos, written and published work of journalists who've been killed from Gaza some 20 years ago, and have included them in our profiles. His name is Bilal Jadallah, and he, when this war started, he opened his office, his headquarters, Gaza Press House, for local journalists who were immediately unable to use electricity or internet, but also have seen their own media facilities being bombed, dozens of them in the early stages of the war. So he provided his space for them to do their work, and he delivered even safety equipment, vests with press signs for them for free as protection. And he had decided not to leave Gaza and stay behind, but he sent his family to the south, and until his own media office was destructed in Israeli bombing, and he lost a colleague and someone else, a family member, was injured. He had finally decided to take his car and leave, and on his way out of Gaza City, he was hit with an Israeli shelling and killed right away. He is just one case, I think, that many people, of course, will remember, not just because of him being a journalist, but as a father figure, really, for journalists in Gaza. There are many cases, of course, that stand out because how it shows that the journalists were targeted. There is about a dozen of them, including those who were killed in precise drone attacks, like Al Jazeera's Hamza al-Dahdouh and Samer Daqa, but also those who were killed after receiving threats from the IDF, also Anas, another Al Jazeera journalist, who've been receiving threats from Israeli authorities, including text messages showing his own location to him with threats if he doesn't stop covering that he would be killed. And similar cases, of course, that shows family members and others, colleagues, who've been killed after they've been threatened by Israeli authorities.
So even wearing the press insignia, that doesn't mean that journalists are protected. And of course, journalists are civilians, and by international law, they are protected anyway. But it seems that there is nowhere to hide, no safe place. And I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on that, because you've been discussing about the targeting of journalists. Out of the journalists who are killed, how many you think were targeted in Gaza?
I mentioned the case of a dozen. Ibrahim Lafi, for example, one of the first to be killed near the Gaza, the Erez crossing, had his press insignia, and there was no crossfire nearby when he was killed. It's similar to what happened to Reuters' Sama Abdallah in Lebanon. And basically, this disregard of press insignia is one that we have documented also in our deadly pattern in May. That's what happened with Shireen Abu Aqla and 12 other journalists who've been killed with Israeli fire over 21 years. And what we see in this war, the Israeli army doing even worse, refusing to give any guarantees to international media organizations and only allowing them to cover if they go on censored tours. Of course, this disregard is part of a pattern as well in which these journalists are accused of being terrorists, and as part of false narratives that the Israeli army pushes right away, saying there were crossfire, there were a threat to Israeli position or to an Israeli soldier, and later investigations by independent groups, international investigators, show that none of them were true. This is a pattern that we say also were designed to evade the responsibility by deflecting blame and basically treating those concerns as a PR problem, not taking any serious action to investigate. No one has been charged or held accountable from the IDF in all of the journalists killed before this war, and so far none has in this war. We have only seen the IDF apologize after targeting journalists, like they did with Osama Abdallah, like they did with saying things like, oh, it's unfortunate to what happens to Hamza al-Dahdouh, for example. And that only happens when the journalist has an international passport or have worked with an international outlet that they say so. But what they did is usually just preliminary cursory probe that leads to nothing and become part of the overall black hole of information about the killing of journalists.
In fact, I see another issue here with your latest prison census, the one that came out in December 2023, that shows that journalists in the occupied Palestinian territories are being jailed or held in administrative detention in record numbers. And Israel emerged in this same report as the sixth leading jailer of journalists around the world, tied with Iran, especially following the October 7 attacks by Hamas. Can you share some of the stories you hear from journalists who have been or had been jailed? And what does that show for the overall coverage from the area?
So in addition to keeping track of journalist casualties, those who were killed, injured, or went missing, we also have kept a track of cases of detention, imprisonment, threats, obstructions, even cyber attacks, cases of censorship that we've seen soar and become the norm in the West Bank and even now in Israel itself. Since the beginning of the war, we have documented 25 arrests, including 17 in the beginning of December. That included basically majority of the cases are journalists who are put in administrative detention, in military prosecutions without much rights of lawyer or family visits, and only two charged with incitement out of the 25, and based on no evidence can be kept and renewed in this detention indefinitely. And this is part of a pattern that include communication blackout that happened at least 7 times since the beginning of the war. Last one last week lasted for 7 days. And that also include muzzling of international media, not allowing them access and denying them any guarantees for safety. But more alarmingly, the recent emergency legislation that the war cabinet have approved that allowed the Israeli government for the first time to shut down and close international and Palestinian media. They have already used it against J Media, where they arrested five of their journalists. They've used it against Hezbollah's Al-Mayadeen channel, who also lost two journalists in Israeli bombing. And they've threatened them to continue to threaten to use it Al Jazeera. But this worrying legislation has included, for example, for the first time, the ability of the Israeli government to jail even Israeli journalists for up to 1 year under suspicious charges of harming national morale and harming national security.
So this conflict is almost like a black box, right? Where someone has switched off the light. On the one hand, we see international journalists entering only embedded with the Israeli army. And on the other hand, we witness the murder of local journalists who are reporting with commitment under the worst possible circumstances. What do you think we can collectively do to report more fairly this conflict?
Of course, censorship by the Israeli government have to stop. What they have done so far of put together the killing, the imprisonment, the obstruction, the threats, and that communication blackout all lead up to not just a chilling effect, but a news blackout. And this has far-reaching, but also immediate consequences, life-saving consequences for 2 million people in Gaza who are struggling to find information about where to find shelter, clean water and food. But also implications for safety for millions and millions more citizens in the region whose safety impacted directly by the conflict. And overall, to hundreds of millions of people all over the world who are following this conflict, trying to understand it, what we need is journalists, not just on the ground, like Palestinian journalists being eyewitnesses, giving testimonials about the impact of the war, but we want a polarity of media, diverse media, that can hold power to account. That includes international and local media, but also access to international investigators. And one of the things we saw happen, for example, from the International Court of Justice was they have said that Israel cannot be allowed to, for the evidence of what happened during the war to be wiped out. And for that, we need Israel to face public scrutiny by allowing international media and international investigations directly and immediately into Gaza.
Thank you. Is there anything else you think we should add as the discussion continues 100 plus days into this conflict? The last time I checked your website, which is constantly updated, 83 journalists were killed. I hope this number remains the same, and I would like to ask for your projections for the next few days and months.
Well, the more this war continues, the more likely we are to witness the complete destruction of Gaza's journalist corpse. This is why we have called for a ceasefire in October. That's why we continue to ask for immediate and critical help for journalists and all civilians, and continue to appeal to Israeli allies to allow safe haven, safe corridors, and relief for journalists who wants to get out of Gaza, in addition to pressuring Israel to allow international journalists into Gaza.
Thank you for your time, and we hope we don't witness any more deaths of journalists in Gaza.
Thank you for having me, and good luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
Mixed and sound design by Aris Athanasopoulos. Produced by Panagiotis Menegos. You can listen to more podcasts by visiting podcast.imed.org.